Hello, my name is Dave Emery, and this is side one of For the Record program number 607, titled Shakes on a Plane and Other Scary Stories, Interview with Daniel Hopsicker. This program is being recorded on August 19th of the year 2007. Once again, it's my pleasure and privilege to bring back to our airwaves Daniel Hopsicker, the author of, among other titles, Barry and the Boys and Welcome to Terrorland, as well as numerous stories on the madcowprod.com website, some of which we're going to be visiting with, or some of which we're going to be looking at during the course of the broadcast today. Daniel, welcome back to our airwaves.
Hey, buddy. Good to be with you.
So there's more going on in Southern California, if one is to believe what one reads on your web, or Southern Florida, excuse me. There's more going on in Southern Florida than hurricanes and suntan lotion and Disney World and exotic animals.
Well, apparently so. What are you referencing?
Well, a lot of different things. There have been a number of stories that you've put on your website. One, you've sort of subsumed a number of them under the pun Shakes on a Plane. Obviously, there was a recent thriller movie called Snakes on a Plane, so this is a pun on that. And this alludes to some of the flights that took place in the immediate aftermath of September 11th. There has been some coverage, I should say, not as much as there ought to have been, of the bin Laden family's members' exits from the United States, not all of whom, as we were once told, were completely innocent. In fact, some of them appear to be quite sinister, not just Osama. And then there was the story that possibly the bin Laden himself may have played a role in helping to charter some of those flights to get some of his relatives off. But you've done some work into some of the nature of some of the airlines that were flying out, some of the Saudi royals and others, and what you've come across is some rather dirty business. Well, actually, it reminds me of a title of a book that came out in Europe called Schmutzige Geschäfte und Heiliger Krieg, Dirty Business and Holy War. And you've come across a fair amount of dirty business behind the holy war that has been waged through Southern Florida.
Well, you know, that particular story about the Saudi flights after 9/11 is pretty much a perfect example of what happens to almost any story that's sensitive. When Judicial Watch, the conservative group up in D.C., was successful in forcing the FBI to release documents on the Saudi flights, the one-day story about it was that the FBI documents alluded to the fact that they weren't sure that Osama bin Laden himself had not chartered one of the planes. Which is pretty much a shocking admission, isn't it? But that's where the story ended instead of being where the story should have started, because a close perusal of the documents themselves reveal a ton of other things. I mean, and lead right into the heart of the country.
Right. We should note that if, in fact, the allegation about Osama bin Laden himself chartering one of those planes and the evidence points in that direction, it would mean that one of the very few people who could command a plane in the aftermath of September 11th in American airspace was Osama bin Laden, which is, I guess if you're trying to lose weight, that's a really good way to do it. Contemplate that story, but your series, and you did a series of articles using the Shakes on a Plane theme, and you came across some really unsavory connections of many of the air proprietaries that were used to ferry these people out of the country, and an unintentional pun there, going back to one of your first investigations of an air proprietary and some of the clandestine airlines in Barry and the Boys.
Right. Well, the first thing that hopped out, leapt out was the fact that the documents confirmed the existence of the flight on September 13th from Tampa to Lexington, Kentucky, of Sons of Saudi Sheikhs, which the FAA and FBI had denied ever happened. That flight was confirmed by both the FBI documents released and by the 9/11 Commission in one of the few good things they did. So after saying for 3 years that the flight had not taken place, sure enough, it did take place, and it did fly on September 13th when most planes were grounded. But that's just where it started. When I looked at we're talking about 11, 12 different flights that were chartered by the Saudis in the week and a half after 9/11 to fly Saudi royals and assorted other hangers-on out of the country. And when I began to look at each flight specifically as revealed by the documents, because before that I had not known, the full extent of where these flights had gone from, the first thing that leapt out was that one of the flights, or actually two of them, were by an air charter company owned by the mob.
Mm-hmm. We should perhaps note in that context, Daniel, that for a number of years now, you've been researching some clandestine activities in Florida and a number of different theaters of operation overlap your research. You went all the way back to Barry Seal and the Iran-Contra drug smuggling. His genesis goes all the way back to activities in and around the events surrounding JFK's assassination. And then you began taking a look at what was going on in the area where Mohammed Atta and company had pitched their tent, so to speak. And lo and behold, a whole bunch of tributaries, aircraft, people who had flown those aircraft, and you started coming across a whole series of connections that pretty much joined your first research in Barry and the Boys with your book, Welcome to Terrorland, and in turn, many of the articles that you've written since have built upon that foundation, and you're looking at a synthesis of intelligence activity, the mob, and Islamists.
Sure, but why... The point is, why me? Okay, when the FBI there are ramifications to that question, but you know, leave that aside. When the FBI documents were released several months ago, why did not the Boston Globe pick up on the fact that the owner of one of the air charter companies involved in the airlift of Saudi royals and Bin Laden family members had been identified in numerous published reports in their own newspaper as a business partner and close associates, in quotes, of New England mob boss Raymond J. Patriarca.
Yeah, and what specifically, who was the lieutenant, the alleged lieutenant of Patriarca whom you came across in your research?
Frank Zamiello owns North Star Aviation in Warwick, Rhode Island, and he flew four Saudis, including a Saudi sheik whose name was redacted, on a flight out of Providence to Paris. Now, when you look at the other planes involved, the other air charter companies, two of them were involved in CIA renditions. So you realize, you have to ask yourself, how did the Saudis get hooked up with a mob-owned air charter company? And if you look at that question, you're looking at something that has ramifications for national security and for just about everything imaginable. Because if a mob-owned air charter company has been doing business with the Saudis, as apparently it has, what other business were they doing with the Saudis?
Well, one of the things that's loomed large in your research, and not just your work, Daniel, it's been corroborated by other people. Sibel Edmonds' work has corroborated some of your investigations on September 11th. And there's another book called Dollars for Terror that actually came out before September 11th, but there's an entire chapter in that book, Daniel, called Islamist Deal-Making and Organized Crime, which I think could serve as something of a subheading for an awful lot of the articles that you've come across, because as you've looked into what was going on vis-a-vis the people who, at least some of the people anyway, who pulled off September 11th, it's apparent that they're part of a milieu in southern Florida and a global network, as we've said, that's deeply involved with criminal elements around the world, including wise guys, you know, mafiosi.
Yeah, very definitely. So that was what initially leapt out at me. Then I discovered that two of the air charter companies were involved in CIA renditions. And according to a lawsuit against one of those two, in there we discovered, and here's an amazing fact, through this lawsuit it came out that all three of the largest air charter, corporate air charter companies in Houston are involved with the CIA.
Mm-hmm.
Which, I mean, there's a lot of different cities in this country, right? I mean, why is the CIA so geo-specific? Okay.
Well, a couple of things in that regard. The petroleum industry and the CIA go hand in hand.
Right.
And obviously Houston is a major epicenter of petroleum activities. It's also near America's southern border, and elements of the intelligence community, CIA in particular, have a lot of interest in things that go back and forth across the borders.
Yeah.
So I think it actually, and all of which is to say that it actually is not surprising that that you would find what you found. Doesn't in any way diminish the importance of it. You know, Dan, you were talking about what you were talking the remarks about Saudi princes and mafia people involved with the airlines that flew them out. One of the many sort of common elements that connects your books with your website and subsequent investigations. And one of the things that I did a program about, Alvin of Arabia. Tell us about Alvin of Arabia, Daniel. I mean, that to me, if some of the strange bedfellows that we're talking about here, if that blows people's minds, Alvin of Arabia should really sort of set the table
for people who are going to be dining here. Let me lead into it this way. The fact that Saudis were using a mob-owned Providence, Rhode Island, air charter company, I found especially interesting because the owner of the Providence air charter company was a peripheral figure involved in the John Connolly affair. The FBI was in business apparently with the mob or elements of the mob in Boston for 30 years. And when a Republican, of all things, congressman, who headed a government subcommittee of the House looking at government affairs, wanted to delve into, in early 2002, the Boston FBI's business dealings with the mob, George Bush claimed executive privilege, which was shocking to everyone involved. I mean, that the President of the United States would claim executive privilege to shield a sub-office of the FBI from scrutiny by the government agency, you know, designed to keep them honest. So I've always been, since that time, I've always been alert to Saudi links to Boston.
I got a question, Daniel. John Connolly, you mean as in Grassy Knoll?
No. I'm talking about FBI agent John Connolly.
Oh, okay. All right.
Who was convicted of allowing
Whitey Bulger,
FBI informants, yeah, to murder as many as 30 people in the Boston area and while they were being protected.
And you know what's interesting? You know who was the U.S. attorney who was presiding over all of those activities at that time?
Mm-mm.
Robert Mueller. Currently head of the FBI.
Well, he gets around, doesn't he?
He does indeed, and one of the things that manifests itself in a lot of these investigations that should turn into investigations but don't is you see an awful lot of career inertia. You see people turning up in a lot of interesting contexts,
Many of them. That's the interesting thing. There is the pool of people that are connected, protected, and trusted is not that large. So you see John Negroponte moving from being ambassador to Honduras during the Contra affair, when Honduras was known as the trampoline where cocaine from Colombia would be transshipped because single engine planes can fly from Colombia to Honduras, where the cocaine was then put on military transport planes. So Negroponte was in Honduras as a American proconsul, and he did such a good job that he eventually became head of national intelligence.
With
a half dozen other jobs between now and then. A guy like Asa Hutchinson, who was the U.S. attorney in a backwater part of Arkansas, while Barry Seal's C-123s were rumbling over his office every day and never saw a thing during the most massive cocaine airlift the world has ever seen, you know, then became head of the DEA and I guess eventually ended up as an assistant secretary at Homeland Security. And I guess, what's he doing now, running for governor or something in Arkansas? You know, there's these guys, there can't be that many of them, I mean, that are on the inside. But that's neither here nor there.
Tell us about Alvin of Arabia, though. That in order to sort of set the table, if people are wondering what are these guys talking about, tell them about Alvin Malnick, okay, really briefly.
One of the big lies that the media has conspired to tell the American people is that the mob doesn't exist anymore, or exists in some incredibly weakened, you know, form of itself. And yet, probably the biggest fact arguing against that is that everyone in America knew the name Meyer Lansky when Meyer Lansky headed the syndicate in Miami.
Mm-hmm.
And nobody in America knows the name of the person who took over when Meyer Lansky died. Virtually no one. And yet it's been published, the Reader's Digest of all places published, that the man that took over the syndicate when Lansky died is Alvin Malnick, an attorney in Miami, who more or less qualifies as a private citizen these days. We don't know who he is or what he does. We do know that he had a lot of dealings with Michael Jackson.
He had a lot of dealings with a lot of people. That what really strikes me.
The Beatles catalog is controlled by the mob today, okay, or was at least passed through the hands, and that just chaps my ass. I just found that amazing. Anyway, Alvin Malnick, long story short, was close buddies with Prince Turki, I believe it was. With the brother of the king of Saudi Arabia,
mm-hmm.
And in fact, it gained control of that man's finances, and moved to Saudi Arabia in the mid-80s, converted from Judaism to Islam,
mm-hmm.
And took an Islamic name.
Yep, and his son, I believe, actually married into the Saudi royal family. So he is
an
in-law of the Saudi royal family, and he has been dubbed by you Alvin of Arabia. The point being that the heir to the Lansky syndicate, his son married into the Saudi royal family, he's converted to Islam, and he's now Prince Alvin of Arabia. So
I know. That was like one of my more felicitous title chapters in Barry and the Boys. There's nothing I can do to these people to bring them to justice, but the power a writer has is to mock, you know, is to point out the emperor's new clothes. And so calling him Alvin of Arabia, I guess was small recompense, but then small recompense is better than none.
Yeah. You also noted something else. You noted in your Shakes on a Plane series is that in addition to Saudi members of the Saudi royal family and mafiosi and spooks, you also got a bunch of right-wing Christians who are part of the same milieu. And by the way, we should, for people maybe who have just tuned in, who is Daniel Hopsicker? Daniel has, for a number of years now, been investigating the milieu in South Florida through which Mohammed Atta and a number of the September 11th hijackers infiltrated into the United States. And the milieu that gave succor to them, so to speak, is one of these clandestine, drug-smuggling, mob-connected operations, or really a milieu, my favorite word, that simply goes on unabated. It hasn't been touched, and other than you, Daniel, nobody's really looking into it.
No, there are moments when I wonder how far I really want to push this, because it's you know, it was career suicide a long time ago, and I don't know how much more I need to find out before I know all I need to know.
Well,
especially because being sued a lot is a drag. Okay,
mm-hmm.
And you don't want to let on that it's getting you down or bothering you. But you know, for the last 3 weeks, I've done nothing but compile documents. In a lawsuit that I'm going to refuse to settle. I already settled, as you probably know, a lawsuit brought against me by a German pilot who I alleged was a close associate of Mohammed Atta.
Mm-hmm.
Well, this German pilot was in business with another German pilot who turned out to be the closest associate of Mohammed Atta,
mm-hmm.
In the U.S., but I wasn't able to conclusively demonstrate that this first German pilot was a close associate of Atta, and so I settled a lawsuit. 6 months after I settled the lawsuit, his buddy, the man whose business he bought when he moved to the States, to Florida, and operated which was being operated at that point illegally, was the subject of an FBI terror alert in the South Pacific, Wolfgang Boringer.
Yep. Yes, indeedy.
The feds were looking for Wolfgang Boringer, and when they found him, the first thing he said to them was, you can't arrest me. I'm with the CIA. And he obviously must be, because they let him go. And nothing more has been heard of him or this. But Wolfgang Boringer, who was let go by the FBI because he said he was with the CIA, was without a doubt a very close associate of Mohammed Atta,
mm-hmm.
both here in Florida and in Germany. Now, what does that say? What it says is, the true story of 9/11 remains to be told. The truth about 9/11, whatever it turns out to be, is still out there. We know far less about the September 11th attack than we knew about the Kennedy assassination. Which brings me to the second lawsuit. And I'm calling the man that owned the Lebanese man owned a convenience store in downtown Venice where the Arabs hung out. Across the street from the convenience store was an apartment where a cabbie who picked him up there says Mohammed Atta went to the Orlando Executive Airport, picked up rich Saudi sheikhs back and forth and back and forth, and Zagras Moussaoui was there. Now, the man that owned the convenience store sued, and I'm not going to say his name here because I'm in the middle of a lawsuit, and there's no point in giving them further ammunition while it's under litigation, but you know, I have used his name before.
Mm-hmm.
This Lebanese man sued me and said, no, I wasn't there. I didn't abandon the store. Turns out, from the first round of depositions, he was in Saudi Arabia when 9/11 happened. He was on the 15th floor of a skyscraper in Riyadh, where he was the Middle Eastern manager for a U.S. defense contractor.
Which is Titan Corporation, right?
Titan, yeah. And not Lockheed. Not the most, I mean, is there a defense contractor that has more dings and been accused of more felonies than Titan Corporation?
By the way, this is the contractor that was front and center in the scandals that were surrounding Randy Duke Cunningham. That's probably the context in which people would be most familiar with Titan.
The biggest campaign contributor to Randy Duke Cunningham, the employer of the contractors accused of torturing people at Abu Ghraib, a company that was convicted and paid a record $26 million fine for suborning the election of the president of Benin in West Africa 3-4 years ago. Charges, you know, as long as my arm against Titan Corporation. Anyway, so this guy says, it wasn't me. It was my brother-in-law. Well, there were no changes, this is a man who moves his companies in and out of the names of close relatives.
Mm-hmm.
He's been proven to do that.
Mm-hmm.
And the close relative, it was his brother-in-law that fled after 9/11 back to Lebanon. He was worried about his kids, he says. Well, all fine and good, but no one has been able to answer for me this. I was in, fortuitously, in Washington, D.C. for the last day of the 9/11 Commission hearings and heard the FBI drone on and lie as they made the presentation. And when they got to the part of the presentation was where the money came from. You know, they didn't get money from any outside sources, blah, 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 blah. In fact, the largest single money transfer they got was $70,000 that went to Marwan al-Shehhi. And when they mentioned that, up on the screen, you know, they where their presentations, exhibits would appear, was a money order. I can't remember if it was from Western Union. I'll have it shortly. But and on this money order, it was to Marwan al-Shehhi in the address, and I'm the only one, and I can't believe this, the only one in the whole world that knew this, that the address that the money order came to, $70,000 came to, was 201 Nokomis, the abandoned convenience store.
Mm-hmm. Now, this was a convenience store that was frequented by some of the hijackers.
Exactly.
And
they
also
hung out there.
I want to call to mind before we, because we're going to be putting a wrap on this side, a couple of other interesting details about the mystery person whose name we won't use. In addition to owning a convenience store, this guy was a major contractor for Titan Corporation, and he also owned a casino boat. I mean, doesn't every convenience store owner also own a casino boat?
And today he owns a string of, you know, perhaps 40 gas stations in South Florida. Which is 40 more gas stations than I own.
That's really convenient. You know, that's convenience.
You can imagine. It's like, you know, David and Goliath. But I'm not going to settle this lawsuit because this is 9/11's grassy knoll. I mean, this is where if you dig, you will find truths about 9/11 that have not yet surfaced. I'm not saying I know what they are. And in fact, I can guarantee you I don't. But on the other side, since you don't have any time here, I'll tell you where I first became interested and curious about Lebanese involvement in 9/11.
All righty. Well, let's tell people about your website and your books and so forth. Then we will continue this discussion on side two. Just remember that this convenience store owner also works for Titan Corporation and owns a casino boat. So this is quite a guy. Danny, your website and your books.
MadcapProd.com, and both my books just came out in paperback.
All righty.
So Barry and the Boys and Welcome to Terrorland are both available in paperback on the website, and I've even packaged them with documentaries that were done during the course of researching each of the two books. And so it's kind of like a complete audiovisual package.
www.madcowprod.com is Daniel's website. His books are available there. His many articles are available there, carrying the research of his books forward through the years. And my past interviews with Daniel are available both from Spitfire and on www.wfmu.org/Dave Emery. And there's a wealth of other material available on the Spitfire website. We've been visiting with Daniel Hopsicker, and we've been talking about shakes on a plane and other scary stories. We're going to continue with these scary stories, and Daniel's going to continue to you're going to play Crypt Keeper for us on side two, Daniel. But this wraps up side one of For the Record program number 607, Shakes on a Plane and Other Scary Stories, interview with Daniel Hopsicker, being recorded on August 19th of 2007. My name is Dave Emery. Thanks for listening.